Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of X-Roof Features Interview. Today we have a crazy guy that brought back two films, and then the second film, and then he's going to come back and bring two more. I think he's crazy, but we'll find out. Alan Gardner's in the house. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I can attest that I am somewhat crazy, yes.
And we forgot, we got Lucky's name of your film?
Yes, that is the name of the film we were discussing today.
And let's just start right at the beginning. You really just center on one location, and this is dialogue heavy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
you have a motor mouth, buddy.
Wait, my buddy in the movie is a motor mouth, or I'm a motor mouth?
Both of you together. Both. There is, like, no room to breathe. Like, if you're not focusing, you miss things.
That's very true. Well, yeah, I'm definitely a dialogue junkie. Dialogue is one of those things, when I first started writing scripts as a teenager, I couldn't write dialogue to save my life, and I remember just getting so frustrated and, like, banging my head, not literally banging my head against the wall, but effectively doing that, because I was trying to capture how my friends and I talked. So I just became obsessed with pursuing that and refining my skills there until eventually it got to the point I'm like, oh, this actually feels somewhat, you know, representative of life and how we talk. So then I've just been hooked ever since, really, and yeah.
So
I love the talkie.
I'm going to discuss this film a little bit vaguely, but I think you'll be able to understand where I'm going.
Yeah.
Is this autobiographical? Because I really felt you were getting your angst out in this film at times.
Sure. I mean, definitely certain elements of it are autobiographical. There are a lot of elements of my character and the character of Aaron, who's my character's best friend in the movie, that were definitely based on friends of mine. The whole genesis of this, it started as a play years ago. I had an idea for a play. And, well, okay, there's certain things I'll avoid saying right now because I don't want to give away too many things. But, I had an idea for a play. I basically wanted to chart the trajectory of, like, you know, two friends over the course of the years, of a few years. And just, I wanted to try to capture, like, the subtle little ways that we kind of, like, influence and challenge and shape each other, so. Anyway, and then for me and my friends, I mean, that usually, there's a lot of talking involved, a lot of dialoguing, a lot of back and forth, so that's what the movie became.
So
the play and then the movie.
I want to start. Are you both characters then? Or are your friends both characters? Or are you really, you are you, and your friend is your friend?
So Matthew Gilliam, who plays Aaron, is not like his character at all.
No, I get that.
Yeah, I am more like my character in a lot of ways. There's also elements of some other friends of mine in my character. But then the character of Aaron is definitely based on, yeah, there's certain specific friends that I kind of created a amalgam of in a lot of ways. Like people who are, you know, going through certain things that, you know, people who always, like, you know, we say in the film, like, made me feel like I was home. Like people who I had that kind of familiarity with and who I love that much. But also, you know, people who, when we all have our struggles and we all have, you know, the things we're trying to change about ourselves and all trying to grow. So anyway, I was able to, like, to kind of channel a lot of the frustration, a lot of the love of that I share with my friends. And, you know, when you love people that much, you know them that well, there's bound to be frustration about certain things. And so I was able to pour a lot of that into the movie as well and say a lot of things to them that I wanted to say.
I mean, I'm watching this film, and I don't know if you guys were ever friends. I'd write frenemies, absolutely.
Really?
Because I would want to kick Aaron's ass 24/7. I would have knocked him out within a week.
That's funny.
Because
you know what? More to your point, I would say, you know, yeah, they're brothers, really, more than anything.
Yes.
Just not biologically. And their bond is very much so fraternal in that classic, like, brotherly sense. I definitely get the urge to want to knock Aaron out from time to time. It's funny too, because now when I watch it, with both of the characters, like my character as well, Brad, like there's certain things that he says and does that just makes me want to slap him silly.
Brad's emo. Does he know it?
Brad.
He's got some issues.
The character Brad is fairly emo. Yeah. I mean, especially, yeah, throughout his 20s. I think he realizes it more and more over time. I mean, there's definitely, Aaron definitely is the one who if people were to, like, you know, step back and be like, which one of these guys needs more work done on them, so to speak, as far as their personal issues go, you know, Aaron's the easy target. But Brad has a lot of adjustments he needed to make as well. That's for damn sure. Because he's very emo, and he's very self-indulgent at times with his wounded feelings. And so I think, you know, a lot of the movie, too, is him growing through all that. And, yeah, no, he's definitely emo.
Yeah, I mean, I keep looking at these guys and going, can you both grow up for 5 minutes?
Like, well, you know, that's good. That's good.
Like, I wanted to pick up Aaron and go, listen, you're an idiot. Grow up.
Yeah.
That's all I want you to do. And Brad, you're smart. Go do it. Stop worrying about it. And, I mean, your film spoke to me a lot. I guess it was like me hanging out with my friends in my 20s, but just a different relationship, different ideals. But I got where you were going.
Cool.
At numerous times.
I'm glad it riled you up. Like, I'm glad that, like, apparently, you know, and not to assume, but, like, it seems like the characters were hopefully lifelike enough for you to elicit that kind of response. And that they weren't just,
They definitely were not empty characters. But I mean, if you were not paying attention, you miss a lot of times for these guys.
That's good.
I'm not going to ruin the last piece of paper moment at the end of the film. And I'm going to leave it at that because I don't think I'm ruining anything.
Fair enough.
I thought that was a little bit reachy to me. And I'll leave it at that. I know what you were going for. I accept that. But I don't know if I can agree with it. Does that make sense?
To each their own, my friend.
And I'm going to ask, when you've gone to screenings of the film, what has the reaction been to that?
Oh, man, this is a fine line to walk with. I'm trying not to give anything away.
Just, do people like it? People don't like it? 50-50?
I think for the most part, I mean, from what I've gathered, at least, people responded to it. But, again, for me, yeah, like you said earlier, like, a lot of this was me getting out a lot of things that I needed to say. It was definitely a love letter to my friends, the whole thing. So I kind of ended it on that note in a literal sense, in a lot of ways.
Yes, I definitely think. I did take it that way. But I guess it depends how they feel about their relationship, and a lot of it is based on that.
Sure. Well, I guess, too, like, I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's interesting, too, that you said earlier that you consider them more frenemies. And, like I said, you know, they're definitely brotherly in a lot of ways. Because, no, for me, I mean, they're very much so incredibly close friends who have a deep connection and who love each other. I mean, they love each other a lot, and they are like family in a lot of ways. So for me, and also, you know, with me and my friends, we're very, we are very expressive. We don't hold back on our love for each other. You know, we're huggers. We say, I love you. I don't, you know, buy into any of the, oh, yeah, is there any, cursing here?
Go ahead.
If it comes out naturally, I won't force it. If it comes out naturally, but yeah, I just don't play that, you know, that bullshit about like holding back your feelings, because you know what? Eventually, we all die, and I don't want to, you know, have not said the things I need to say.
I agree with you. I think that's important, but I mean,
and again, to your point, like, you know, to each their own.
Okay, I'm gonna go back to Brad and the relationship again. I'm gonna keep going on about this. It's gonna be a while. Does Aaron really give all he can give?
Does Aaron really give all he can give?
I agree Brad does. Brad tries so hard to give everything he can give.
Right.
Aaron doesn't have the focus to do it.
To give everything that he can give?
He screws up his relationships constantly.
Right.
Screws up his work. Even the job that he had to wear sandals to, he screwed up.
Right.
And exactly. Even he says that. How can I screw up a job that I wear sandals to? He screws that one up.
Right.
So is he giving it his all?
Oh, man. I mean, throughout a lot of the movie, no. Again, I don't want to try to, you know. Yeah, I mean, throughout the bulk of the movie, he is not giving. He's constantly getting in his own way and sabotaging his life.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many people I've known like that. And so I definitely had a lot of frustration going into it. And there's, again, it's that feeling of, like, you know, want to grab someone by the shoulders and just shake some sense into them.
But Brad doesn't do that. He lets him keep doing it. He tells him you're doing wrong.
Right.
But he lets him do it over again and over again.
Sure. Sure.
And to me, I'm with Brad. I'm like, buddy, you need to get a new roommate or leave this guy. He's not helping you.
Right. Yeah. No, and that's the thing, though. I've certainly, like, there comes a point with friends when they have certain issues where you're constantly questioning whether or not what you're doing is enabling them, if you're coddling them and simply enabling them, or if you're being a good, patient, understanding support system. And, I mean, especially in my 20s, there were a lot of instances in which, you know, I just was trying to be there for a friend. And in hindsight, you know, you look back and I guess I was doing more enabling than anything. But at the same time, you know, I'm not one to, I don't give up on my friends. So I'm big on second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth chances. So I don't know. So that definitely came across in my character as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So this story, I'm really going to hammer this again. It's autobiographical, 100% now, I'm convinced.
In a lot of ways. I mean, there's a lot of things about Brad, too, that are very different from me as well. As far, I mean, that's one of the big things is he does, like, he's really, like, he does hold himself back and shoot himself in the foot a lot. And, you know, we've all experienced that, but I think that's something I dealt with more in my late teens and then grew out of because, obviously, you know, I didn't hold myself back from making movies and putting myself out there.
Well, just because so, you...
But there are a lot, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of elements that are autobiographical across it. Autobiographical and just, yeah.
Well, let's get into a few of the points. You discussed writing scripts for Hollywood in the film.
What's that?
You discussed, does that happen for you?
Honestly, like, I haven't really, for the most part, I've done, when I write a script, I'm already planning on making it myself. I haven't actually tried to get a script out into quote-unquote the Hollywood system in a while. Like, I was hired to write a script a few years ago, and that was an interesting process, to say the least. And then, but it's funny, it's something I think about more, because sometimes I'm like, okay, maybe I should write one that I, you know, with the intent of, you know, selling it. And then what always happens is, because everything I write is personal to one degree or another, you know, I very much so fall in love with the characters, and I fall in love with the material, and then I'm like, ah, actually, maybe we'll just make this one ourselves. So that happens consistently, but maybe at some point I will, you know, actually set out to write one that I'm going to sell, or at least be open to that option and try getting an agent with it and this, that, and the other. So,
okay. At one point you're drinking beer in your film.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like real beer.
It is not. I'm actually big on, when there's drinking involved, like I don't actually drink when there's any on screen drinking.
So,
I just think that's, it doesn't work. It doesn't, I don't think it's a good way to go.
So where'd you put in the beer bottles?
Man, I'm trying to remember. Honestly, like in most of the, I think it's water. Because
okay.
The beer bottles weren't translucent on purpose. So we could just drink water.
Yeah, they're very brown.
Yeah, yeah. So then, I mean, keep in mind too, like we did this on stage. So this was a really gratifying part of the process for me is we started rehearsal in June of 1 year, and then we did the play. So we rehearsed throughout the summer, then did the play through October into early November, and then a month later we shot the movie. So it was a really cool experience for me going from the rehearsal process, then doing it on stage, and then shooting the movie with the cast. So anyway, going back to what brought that up in the first place was so on stage, you know, we're having to drink like, you know, consistently. So, I mean, we would have been always fucked if it was actual booze of any kind. It was just water.
Okay, fair enough. well, the liquor on top of the fridge looked good. So if that's all fake, too.
Oh, good. Cool.
I mean, you guys didn't drink. Well, you did drink it once. You did whiskey shots. And, oh, there's a question for you. Do you like whiskey shots?
I actually do. But, fun fact, I used to not. The first time I puked from drinking, I was 20, and it was basically straight whiskey. So for a little while after that, you know, a lot of people have that drink. They're like, I'm not going near that one because of some puking-related memory. And so I shied away from whiskey for a while, but then that didn't last long. Now I do like whiskey.
Okay, because in the film, again, I'm going back to it, that you refresh, you puke when you drink whiskey. I don't want to do this.
Yes.
See,
yes.
I told you I watched these things. I want to discuss, you have a daylight fades poster in the background.
Yeah.
My favorite comment in the I'm trying to find it, sorry. Clocks do stuff posters.
What?
You have a weird poster, a blue poster. It was hard to tell what it was.
So, okay. So Dudes Do Stuff is a play that I wrote and directed that we put up.
Oh, that's what it was. Dudes. I can't remember my own handwriting.
We did that. So we did that play prior to We Got Lucky. And then Daylight Fades was, so Daylight Fades was a movie we made in 2009, and then Dudes Do Stuff is a play we put up in 2010. So those are both little inside winks.
I figured as much. Well, my favorite part of your thing, as you're moving along in the years, that you moved the poster from behind the couch, but you put it in the kitchen.
Right.
So you didn't think I would notice?
There are certain little things that we did were, well, I'll say this too. We didn't have an art department on that. There are certain things we moved around, like we shot the whole movie in 5 days.
Okay.
And there are certain things we moved around where it's like, all right, maybe this will, like, you know, just to change things up a little bit, but within a manageable amount of time. And also, you know, to a realistic extent. So every now and then something would just get moved. We're like, oh, let's try it over there just to shake things up a little bit. But I'm glad that you noticed. Because I'd forgotten about that.
I want to discuss the brown couch that never seems to ever fade.
Absolutely.
That's been there for, I don't know how long you guys were friends, 17 years in the film, maybe 20 years. I can't quite, I didn't.
Not that long.
I should have written it down, but.
The film charts 9 years.
Okay. Same couch?
Same couch, man.
Same table.
It was a fun story there. It's maybe not a fun story, just a story. So anyway, at the beginning, so when we shot scene one, at first we're like, oh, maybe we'll try, like, you know, putting a blanket over the back of the couch just to, like, make it look a little different. So we had, like, a big throw over the couch, and then after, like, a take, I think just one take, we used, I'm like, you know what, this is distracting, I don't want to try to mask, like, it's gonna be the same couch throughout, I'm okay with that. I think ultimately, like, if people, there's some people who are gonna be along for this ride, and there's some people who aren't. And for those who aren't, the couch might, you know, bother them or whatever, I was like, ah, fuck it. We're using the same couch. We're not trying to make it look different. It is what it is. Might as well embrace it. So, yeah. We're not moving this couch out of the house. We don't have time for that in these 5 days, that's for sure.
So were you shooting in a house or an actual apartment? Because I would say an apartment.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Apartment is what.
Oh, okay.
Not an actual house. Yeah, we did shoot. We shot in our friend, so Drew Pasley, who played Scotty in the movie, the cokehead friend. The deviant, as it were. And he was also one of the camera ops too, for the scenes he wasn't in. That was his place at the time. So he graciously let us shoot there. Which is one of the things that earned him that, producing credit as well.
At the end of the couch was a pile of headshots.
Uh-huh.
Whose headshots?
Those were headshots that, I gathered over time from different auditions for some of our movies. So I had them in a filing cabinet. So we had them at our disposal. So we put them in there.
You moved them twice in the film. We had once on the couch and once on the counter.
Yeah. In order to, you know, accurately reflect the passage of time. That's what happens. People just move some headshots around. That's how you know that 9 years is going by.
You take a shot at Memphis at one point. So I'm going to ask, is Memphis really barbecue and blues?
Oh, is it really barbecue and blues?
I've never been to Memphis, so I'm asking you.
I'm from Memphis. I love Memphis. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's barbecue and blues. Oh, well, as the Aaron character. Well, that's from the vantage point of someone, too, who knows nothing about Memphis. And he's like, barbecue and blues and all that shit?
Yes.
But that's what, yeah, Memphis is a lot about barbecue and blues, and it's beautiful. I love Memphis.
Okay, fair enough. when your character Bragg finally leaves the apartment, only takes him 8 years.
Yeah.
You empty out into a dark hallway.
What's that? He goes out into a dark hallway?
A dark hallway. I was kind of confused. Why is the hallway dark?
Why is the hallway dark?
Yes.
When he goes outside.
He opens the door, and it's dark. I'm like, shouldn't an apartment be lit in the hallway?
Oh, I guess. I mean, that was just the natural lighting scheme of that apartment building. We shot that scene at night, and they just didn't have much in the way of illumination out there. So
it was pitch black, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Maybe not the safest hallway.
Okay.
But damn it, it was our hallway.
And I have a question. How come we never see anybody entering the apartment? It's always a cutscene on that couch.
And it happens. People enter the apartment. My ass, they don't enter the apartment. Let's see.
Nope. We always see them talking at the bar.
Caitlin, Aaron, and Jamie enter, but we just don't see it because it's under the opening title cards. So fair enough. When else is that? Scene two. There are a few scenes where people enter, just not many.
Okay, well, because you always seem to pick it up. You cut scene, and then we go right to talking. So maybe I'm missing the mentoring.
Oh, well, that too. I mean, a lot of that too for me is like, as I cut the movie together, it's like, you know, just keep the momentum going. And there's certain things where I realize, this happens a lot when I edit, that I'm like, oh, I don't actually need this kind of like introduction part of the scene. Let's kind of get more into the heart of the scene. Like every now and then you need to, you know, as people are do in real life, have a certain quote unquote, like not small talk, but casual conversation going on before you start circling the things that are on someone's mind that they need to get out there. But every now and then I just like, oh, let's just kind of cut right more into the heart of what's going on here. And that's something that happened a lot. Like, you know, when we did the play, because the play ran about 25 minutes longer than the movie. And then we shot the movie and I got into editing. I'm like, you know, for the play, this work, whatever. But now for the movie, I'm like, there's a lot of things I got rid of. Well, 25 minutes of things.
So what did I lose?
I mean, nothing plot-wise, like quote-unquote, like, you know, plot-wise or nothing. It was just a lot of little moments, basically, just a lot of little exchanges. Some of it was those very, like, you know, the lead-ins of people, like, entering the apartment or sitting down on the couch. And sometimes I just, like, kind of cut straight into the them on the couch. Yeah. So it was more just a collection of, like, little moments throughout that I cut as opposed to any, like, you know, big scenes or, you know, big chunks. So.
How hard is it to cry on screen?
How hard is it to cry on screen? It's interesting. Well, here's the thing. And I think you just learned this over the, after acting for years. Because, you know, I remember when I was late teens and, you know, 20, 21, there are certain scenes where I would try to cry. And that's a problem. So my first piece of advice for any actors who are, like, trying to cry is stop trying to cry. Because for me, it's the same with, like, any emotion. Like, my thing became more, like, you know, I remember the first movie where I was able to cry on screen. And because I wasn't pushing it. I was basically, you focus more on your character's circumstances and what they're feeling. And then if the tears are going to come, they're going to come. But I don't like fake or forced crying at all. So I never encourage actors to do that, including myself. If it happens, it happens. If not, no worries. I just want to see something authentic. So I guess to answer your question, it's very hard when you're trying to cry. But if you just let it go and kind of live in the moment as the character, then it'll come if you're tuned in.
A question about Aaron's character. How do you rack up a $3,000 bar tab at a strip bar?
Very carefully. With a lot of, or very, maybe carelessly, more to the point. I have a buddy who that essentially happened to years ago in his early wayward 20s. I won't name names, but I don't know how he did it. I wasn't there. I just heard the story. And you know what? The figure might have been inflated a little bit for the sake of the story, but I do believe that he blew through a ton of money at that establishment.
And you didn't get the whole story?
I don't remember. It's been so long. I mean, we're talking, this is over a decade ago, so.
I'd be phoning him up right now and go, hi, I'm in an interview. I need this story. Can you give it to me?
I don't know, man. I mean, I have to, like, you know, it's really easy to just kind of piss your money away at places like that. I mean, really any bars, let alone then, like, you know, you got some of these friends and they have one too many or a few too many. And they're into places like that. Next thing you know, you just tossed hundreds down the drain. So.
Yeah, I guess so. I hope I never.
Yeah, it drives the thought of it drives me crazy. Like, I would be sick to my stomach. But so I've had friends who were like, fuck it, you know, whatever.
Not me. Your character and I guess yourself both write scripts.
That is correct.
Now, how do you normally write a script? Because your character in the movie has a lot of problems doing it at times.
Right. I'm much more prolific than my character in the movie. I mean, for me, a lot of it becomes about, like you were talking about earlier, like, you know, he can be indulgent in his emotions and get in his own way and trip himself up. My thing has just always been like, you know, if I am going through some shit, so to speak, is just channeling it into the script and not making excuses for myself and setting a schedule and just kind of like drilling myself, making myself write a certain amount every day. Yeah. And just like, it's like with any discipline, you just have to have a solid plan, have a vision for how to achieve it and just put one foot in front of the other and stop bullshitting and get it done.
Oh, I found my notes. It's a yellow and blue paint behind the couch. Who painted it?
That's a good question. That was, That was Gabe Arredondo, who is one of my best friends and my main producing partner, and he played Adam in the movie. He had made that painting.
Is he the skinny guy or the guy with the curly hair?
Curly hair? He's the one, okay, so the skinny guy, that's the one who does cocaine and all that?
Yeah, that's the skinny guy.
That's Scotty, and that's Drew Pasley. And then, yeah, Gabe's the other one, the one who...
Yeah, he was in the other film we watched.
Yeah, he was Jasper.
Yes, okay, that's what I thought it was.
That's Gabe. So Gabe did the painting.
Okay.
And we kind of put it in there as a little Easter egg for all the Gabe Arredondo art fanatics out there.
Well, I'm sure it's worth millions now.
Come on. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be here having this conversation.
No, of course not. okay. The character Aaron says, and he's just speaking to Brad, says, your last movie was a flop. No stars and no dick jokes.
Right.
Now, I was thinking maybe this was autobiographical. Did you have a flop movie? And did you feel you didn't have any stars and no dick jokes, and that's why it didn't do well?
No, again, it was very I made this one very soon after Being Awesome. I actually wrote it before we shot Being Awesome. There wasn't a sense of like me feeling like I had a flop. There was like, you know, we knew there were certain things with, you know, that it's somewhat harder to sell certain movies if they don't have any stars, at least, or name actors. We've run into that a lot over the years. And then there's certain kinds of, you know, genre films that, like horror films and whatnot, that tend to sell a little more readily. Not necessarily, of course. But there's certain, like, you talk to certain, like, you know, distributors of indie films, and the things that sell more, like genre, like horror, or movies with, you know, people who are name actors to some degree. So anyway, that was more, it was actually kind of more of a commentary on, a little meta, it was a commentary more on We Got Lucky than anything. And also the kinds of movies that I found myself gravitating towards even more of writing, which is very stripped down, character-driven films, like Being Awesome and We Got Lucky. And so it was more of a commentary on that, and me imagining, like, if Brad had one that he felt was a flop. And again, just like, he's the kind of person who does get down on himself or stuff like that. For me, if I'm making it, like, every movie I make, I know exactly why I made it, and I can proudly stand behind those reasons. So for me, if I were to put a movie out there that, you know, didn't get a certain level of recognition that some people would need in order to feel like it was a success, like, that wouldn't really affect me, because ultimately I'm proud of everything I do, otherwise I wouldn't be doing it. So that was more of a Brad thing, to feel like his movie was a flop, and for him to say that to Aaron, and then to Aaron to parrot it back to him. I don't ever look at my stuff that way. They're all, you know, things I'm proud of and things that I had to make for one reason or another.
Okay, you just told me you know why you made a film. So why did you make We Got Lucky?
It goes back to just having certain things. I wanted to capture a friendship. Like, to me is a very realistic friendship played out over the course of 9 years. And I wanted to capture that kind of love between two people and how it can get messy. And, like, the subtle little changes and, like, how, for me, everything is kind of momentous in life. Like, all these quote-unquote, like, little moments all add up and they're all significant. And I just really wanted to capture that. And my friends have always been very significant to me. And I've always been incredibly grateful for them. So, again, there's just a lot that I need to explore about my friendships and a lot I need to say. So that's why.
Fair enough. I only have one last question for you.
Okay.
Trash car bombs. What is it?
Trash car bombs? Oh, Irish car bombs.
Oh, is that what she's saying? Irish, sorry, Irish. Again, I got to stop writing late. Yes, that's an I. Sorry, I wrote, I did write Irish, but I said trash for some reason. Sorry. What is an Irish car bomb?
I think Irish car, I'm finding out more and more. It's an American thing, but it's Irish car bomb. It's a shot of Bailey's and Irish whiskey, typically like Jameson.
Okay.
Put it in a shot glass. And then you take a pint glass with half a Guinness, so like, you know, a few, like 6, 7, whatever, 8 ounces of Guinness, and you drop the shot in there, and you have to chug it. And if you don't, if you chug it, it's delicious. If you don't chug it, if you don't drink it quickly enough, it curdles. So then it starts going down a little chunky. Oh. And then you should probably stop. But that's what an Irish car bomb is.
So what's your record in drinking Irish car bombs?
Oh my God. I've had quite a few, especially on St. Patrick's Days, and of yore in the past. Not so much this last St. Patrick's Day, because times have changed. But in the past, especially around the time we were actually making that play, So in the movie, so we did actually after most nights of the play, we would do celebratory Irish car bombs in the theater lobby.
It
felt fitting. But yeah, go check it out. Try yourself an Irish car bomb.
Yeah, probably not. I can
fair enough.
Okay, are you ready for some fun questions?
I understand.
Fun questions? Yes? No? Maybe?
What's that? You broke up. Did you say fun questions?
Fun questions.
Absolutely. I hope I meet them with fun answers.
Well, I don't know.
Otherwise, I'm screwing up.
So, being a filmmaker, you must have a lot of DVDs on your shelf. What's a strange one?
Ooh, damn. A strange DVD on my shelf?
Oh, I know you have one.
I'm trying to think, like, what the strange, besides our own movies?
See, I wouldn't find those strange, because I went to your shelf and be like, oh, that's your film. Of course you'd have that.
I'm trying to think. Honestly, I haven't bought any in a while. I mean, I used to buy quite a few, but, oh, man, I'm tanking this damn question.
I'll make it easier for you. Strangest film you've ever seen?
Strangest film I've ever seen?
Yes.
Maybe... I don't know if it's a strange. There's ones that come to mind. What's that Will Smith one? Something Pounds.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about? 7 Pounds?
Yeah.
11. Yeah, I've seen it. It's a strange film.
It's a strange film. So the first two that came to mind were that movie and then The Toxic Avenger were the first two that popped into my head.
I've met Lloyd Kaufman in person and handed me a copy of Toxic Avenger. He goes, here, I'll sign it for you. It's been sitting on my shelf for 10 years. Never watched
it. That's funny.
Still sitting there, signed by Lloyd. Handed it to me.
Have you ever seen it?
I've never seen it.
Okay, I haven't seen it since, like, high school, but, man, it was weird.
So there's my Lloyd Kaufman story. I met the guy, handed me a copy of the disc, it's still sitting on my shelf.
And, of course, you know, other movies like Troll 2 and The Room are strange in their own classic kind of way. Their own fascinating, riveting way. But that's, you know.
Hold on. The Room is a genius film. It's terrible, but it's fascinating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Strange doesn't necessarily mean, it's not an insult. Those movies are just, you know, I think pretty objectively strange.
I think The Room, I even bought the book because I had to know more about The Room. I'm like, how does this thing ever get made?
Right.
It is terribly edited.
Yes.
Acting is atrocious.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Sure.
And I'm fascinated. I need to know where this guy, once I read the book, it explained a lot more to me. Then I understood where Tommy was coming from and stuff, and I thought that was important to me to understand that, because I needed to know.
Right. I understand that.
And then I got like, okay, I don't need to watch The Room ever again. I get it. Now I understand what I don't understand how the movie was made. But enough about The Room here, right? You live in L.A. or nearby L.A.?
I do, yeah. Right now we live in Redondo Beach, which is southern L.A. County.
Okay. So random celebrity meetings. Biggest celebrity you've ever met?
Biggest celebrity I've ever met. Ooh.
And it can't be the woman in your film.
No. I'll tell you who was great. I don't know if this is and I love this actor, was Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh, perfect. I love Ben Mendelsohn. I'll give you him.
And you know what? Nicest guy. I met him. I used to work at this restaurant called Doughboys in mid-LA, and I waited on him, and he was just incredibly nice and just seemed like a genuinely happy guy. There was no bullshit. He was just a sweetheart. And so it's always thrilling, of course. I've unfortunately met the other where it's like, oh, someone I used to like, and then I met them, and now I like them no more.
Yeah.
Ben Mendelsohn, I only like even more. And he's brilliant. So. Thanks, Ben Mendelsohn.
Your favorite place to go in LA?
Oh, God, this is going to be so cheesy, but I don't care. My favorite place to go in LA? Is home with my fiance and my baby. But I'm here most of the time, so I don't know if you can really qualify that as a place I go to, because I usually work from home.
Too. Your house is being fumigated. You need to leave, and you have, where are you going?
Where am I going? Her parents' house. Her parents' house about 10 minutes away. I don't know, man. Like, we moved into the spot a few months. I just, you know, I love my family so much, and we're close to the beach, and I don't know. It's great, man. Besides that, my favorite place to go to L.A., God, friends' houses. I know what you're looking for, though. You're looking for more of, like, a site. Or what are you looking for? Like a beach?
Sure. Like give me something, because I'm going to send people to L.A. and tell them to come to your house.
Sounds to this point, they would just come straight to my house. Damn it. Oh, Redondo Pier.
There you go. Thank you.
Go to Redondo Pier, folks. feel free to come by. Just maybe shoot me an email in advance. Thanks.
Would you like to give out that email? Because I'll be more than happy to put it in the interview.
I suppose I can. You know what? I believe if I put this out there, I won't get any kind of hateful emails. Alan@oldschoolpictures.net. That was a mistake.
There you go. I'm out. I'm not editing it. You're out of luck now.
Fair enough. My name is Allen@oldschoolpictures.net. Oh, dear God. I'm such a sunshiny optimist.
Tell everybody where they can find your film.
We Got Lucky is available now on Amazon, Google Play, iTunes, and YouTube.
YouTube?
Yeah, you can rent it from YouTube. They have, you know, for however much it is. I haven't checked in a little while, but a couple bucks, a few bucks, something like that.
Cool.
Yeah. But, so it's those four platforms right now.
And no DVDs, no nothing.
No DVDs yet.
And aren't you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. What's my Twitter? I'm going to look at my Twitter handle real fast.
Well, maybe you can call your wife.
I think I'm just at Alan C. Gardner.
It is. I just wanted to bug you.
Sweet. I'm at Alan C. Gardner. I'm on Facebook. I got my filmmaker page, Alan C. Gardner. Yep, at Alan C. Gardner. That's my Twitter handle and my Facebook.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Have a great night.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Take care. It was fun.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.